the Lord achieves order, and he achieves real order through order. You can't step outside of order to achieve order. It's not real.
I think it's just, sorry, you may have it here, but it is a quote that states that the divine is order itself. The divine is order.
Yes. Yeah.
TCR 56.
Yeah, right down the bottom of that page, actually, I've got that bullet point. Because the Lord is order, he will not act against it. Now, let me just quickly...
I think a pertinent point here is that we should not, and as you could it so easily do in this instance, start to attribute human emotions to divine principles, okay? Having said that, God is not simply a formula. I don't believe that he's a set of mindless cause and effect principles, because there's no heart in those. But at the same time, if we start saying all these things God can't do because they would be contrary to the laws of his order, yet all the time he wills them and endeavours to affect them, my feeling about that is that it's frustrating and restrictive and so on and so on and so on in one sense, and yet it's sort of desperate will at the same time. Now, I can identify with that because I feel impotent at times. I don't think God knows what impotence is in that sense. But it doesn't go to the other extreme and become a formula. Because I think that's actually even worse for me. A heartless God.
Yeah, because we tend to think backwards, don't we? Like, we experience the laws of order in time and space. And we can define those, well, I think we can. We can sort of define these laws of order, and that's how it is. And then when we say the Lord is order, our thought immediately gravitates towards that's what the Lord is. Whereas, in fact, when you get the feeling of this, order is life itself. Love. You know, that's what order is. Love, wisdom, that's order, you know, which is a living, breathing, experiential reality.
Yeah, we tend to want a simple explanation for a complex reality. And I like to think of the tree as an illustration, because every leaf on the tree is, in a sense, a repeat of the general template. But in the individual expression, in other words, in every situation, the order is applied in a different way to fit that situation by the Lord. We're not to know what variations there are, but every leaf on that tree is somewhat different, unique. And yet they all conform to the same general principle. So when we deal with the general principle, we like to see that as, you know, it's something that applies in every situation, but actually it's slightly varied depending on the need. And that's how I...
I want to just skip over a couple of sections and just refer to them and let you read them at your own leisure. On page 4 from the middle, I've got this idea that Swedenborg presents, that man is created in order, or created a form of order. Man was created to be a form for divine order, because he was created as an image and a likeness of God. So since God is order itself, man was created as an image and likeness of order. This is that idea. Swedenborg talks about the contrast of when we live in order and when we live out of order, and what life is like. And they're quite interesting passages. And I've got some listed here. This first one, AC 6370, is about angels going to hell and being protected by being in the order of the Lord, that evil can't approach. So there's those sorts of benefits of order. And then he also points out that, as Philip was saying, man lives contrary to order. Prior to regeneration, we live contrary to order. So we tend to do things, well, we swim against the stream of providence, for example. That stream of providence is order, isn't it? It's the Lord leading us along through life. We think we can go our own way. That's living contrary to order. That's what we tend to do. We tend to run our own lives. So we disobey, we contort all of these ideas and these realities in a variety of different ways. Regeneration is the really, really interesting process, because that is the process by which the order is inverted. So the order in which we live is changed to the order it should be. A couple of things that I haven't referred to here, and it could go into great depth, is the idea of simultaneous order and successive order. So just to refer to it, there's the wedding cake. I don't know if anybody's familiar with the wedding cake idea. Has anybody seen that sort of diagram before? Hmm. Yeah? So there's celestial, spiritual, and natural. And Swinburne talks about the celestial being the highest, the spiritual being the middle, and the natural being the lowest. But then when you compress it all, the celestial is the centre, the spiritual is the next round, and then the natural is the outermost. So he talks about it in this way. And you can look at particularly divine love and wisdom. There's several numbers that talk about that concept there. So we have the Lord in the centre.
That's interesting, David, because you get that... you don't even have to compress the cake, because it just depends upon which view you take of it. If you look at it from above, which is God's view, it all becomes concentric, and there's no sort of hierarchy at all.
Yeah.
Whilst, you know, we tend to look at it from the natural level, from this side on, so we get this hierarchical viewpoint.
Yeah, it's Swedenborg's analogy. That's the way he describes it. He doesn't call it a wedding cake. He calls it a tiered pillar, I think, or something of that nature. Yes, very much so. So, in actual fact, it's not layers as such as this goes right down. Yeah, and this goes right down as well. Into the each layer.
So that is order.
That is order.
The Lord at the centre. Mm. Love flowing from this, from that.
Truth
from that.
Yes.
Use.
Yeah. But we don't live that way.
No. But that's the human form.
Yeah. Yeah. So the way we live is we put ourself at the centre. It is love of self next. And you know, so we're working. So our own self is at the centre. And when we talk on the spiritual level about truths, it's our own truth, which in actual fact is falsity, which is at the centre. And the real truths, what is actually real, we push to the side. We get out of the way. And the core of our being, the heart of what we operate from, is falsity. Or what we operate from is...
Point of clarification.
Yeah.
Just listening... I'm slipping into it sounds as if we do this from will, and we may do at times, but I really think, like we were talking about evil and sin, I really think that this is just our makeup. Okay?
Uh-huh.
You're not talking, it's just clarification, you're not talking about obstinately putting self at the centre. It's just the way we are.
It is.
Would that be like lack of consciousness and awareness?
That's one way.
Partly.
I was talking...
Being asleep.
It's the difference between evil and sin. First we start off in life just selfish. And as we get older, you realise, you know, banging your brother on the head isn't really all that good. And only if you keep doing it does it become a sin.
Yeah.
But as soon as you know that, you've made a rational emotive or will, evaluation of the will, a rational evaluation by the will to decide if it's good or not. And to then persist with it would be an evil.
Yes.
But before that point, it's just education that's required. To draw you out of that.
Yeah.
And even if you don't make a decision, it's still a decision.
Yeah.
Indecision is still a decision.
It may be if you deny it, but it's still a level of consciousness there which you are suppressing from your awareness because you don't want to know.
Well,
your chief harbour is actually stopping you from wanting to know that.
Yeah.
That's
So it's one evil hiding another.
Now, I was talking today with some people just in our general discussions about the experience. The last 2 months I've been doing ballet exams, so ballet is just in my head.
You're looking good.
I was going to say, I'm kind of making you
out too. But one of the things I observed in playing for a class, a rehearsal for a ballet exam, was two teachers trying to teach two little girls how to do a dance. And what... they had this thing where the teachers were saying that this is a dance they have to do together. That's important to bear in mind. So the teachers said, okay, what you need to do is you need to go up the back side, you need to be by each other's side all the way through this process. So they said, you go up to the back, then you turn a corner, turn around to the left, and you do a couple more steps, and you turn around to the left again. Now, what they meant was, you have two children who dance to the back of the stage, they turn left, and then they turn left. Okay, so they're still, if you look at the stage, in the same orientation from the audience's perspective, what they did was this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because a child is egocentric. My world revolves around me. And that's the way I understand things. I like, you've watched Playground Politics. He was naughty to me, or he was mean to me. You know, it's egocentric. It's an inability to step outside themselves and see a greater picture. And that's the way we just are.
Mm.
Our self is in the middle of our world, and we orient ourselves. We orient the world around ourselves.
Speak for yourself.
People vote in elections very often. They just ask, what's in it for me? Yeah. There's nothing for me, therefore I'm not voting for such and such party. Yeah.
And when we get to the adult, as we get to being an adult, we recognise that, well, we should recognise that that is a problem.
So if it's a natural state that that's how we're born... there must be a point to that, and there must be a point at which we are supposed, or we have to, basically turn that sock inside out.
Mm. The point is freedom.
Well, the development of personality.
Because if there was no choice, if we were already at the end state, there would be no choice. We wouldn't be none the wiser and no different, and there would be no change to make, so we would just be...
It's like with all of our difficulties, at first we're in ignorance, which is the innocence of childhood, so being self, independent of what's around us, in innocence, so there's no intent to be bad. And then we grow into the knowledge, And that's when conscience grows, like, say, at the teenager stage. And then you've got a formative mind which is able to more readily evaluate what's around you and what does my impact have on those around me. And then there's the decision to either go with that or go against it in every decision from there on to adulthood, right? So we grow out of the evils as we grow up, or we ought to. That's the plan.
So, look, the problem, I guess, this presents us with then is how do we, or how does it happen in our life that the order flips? How does it turn around? Because the order in which we live, and this is why I say hellish order, inverted order, and contrary to order are slightly different things. We live habitually in a hellish order, an infernal order. And that order, I think, will always tend to reinforce itself. But the Lord seeks to, I use the word impose, but please bear in mind the limitations of that. He seeks to impose a new order upon us, which is real order. And how is it that that flip takes place? And I want to refer to the back of the very last sheet, because this is something I've always found really, really fascinating. And it centres particularly around the story of Jacob and Esau. And as you read through that part of the Arcana in looking at the story of Genesis, it talks about this. You see, the natural order of things is for good to rule. Okay, so the way things should be is for good to rule. But when you get to the Jacob and Esau story, that means that Esau has to be in charge. But Esau is not in a state where he can be in charge if we are truly to regenerate. That is, if we are to... if the Lord is to usurp our position at the centre of our lives, Esau can't be in charge, because Esau will always lead us further down that road of self being in the middle. So there's some really interesting passages there about the way in which, and this is Jacob taking over the birthright and the blessing as being a representative of truth on a natural level, taking over or seeming to take first place from his brother, who is the elder. Esau's the elder. So there is Jacob's pottage, his stew, and Swedenborg describes it as being a confused mess. It's chaos. And this is the part of the reordering process, so that there is a point in our progression where certainly it will seem to us that chaos rules, that there is no order to things.
Well, that's our natural observation on many things in life. That it's random, that it's out of control, and so on. But on another scale, dimension of scale, it's nothing of the kind.
Yes.
And that is sort of, to me, representative of what you're talking about.
Yeah. And what you've got, you see, in this story is you've got the interplay also. You don't just have Jacob and Esau in this scenario, of course. You've got Isaac and Rebekah. And it refers specifically, in Genesis 27, Isaac trembles when he realises what has happened. He speaks about him trembling. And part of the interchapter material in here is all about earthquakes and what that represents. And... So Isaac, representing rational, spiritual good, is pushing the good leading. He's wanting Esau to go out and into the field and kill the venison and bring him food, you see. So he's pushing that direction. But Rebecca, as representing divine truth, recognises that it cannot be so. And she pushes then Jacob to go and, you know, go grab something from the flock, kill that and present that to your father. But when that realisation hits Isaac, he there's this trembling, and Swedenborg places great significance on that. So it's a difficult process for us, but yes, there's a leading there, and there is a pathway through this that we can't sense. We're being led through this very difficult experience. So look, I wanted to bring it to your attention because I just found it really very, very interesting. And also thinking about, you know, what is order? Because we can get very formulaic about it and say, well, order is this and order is that and order is doing these things. But there comes a point, and there are also references in the writings which I haven't given you about we don't know the order.
I think, I'm pretty sure that Esau correspondence actually shifts during the story. So what Esau is when he's robbed of his birthright changes as to what he is when Jacob accedes to to Esau's authority. So in terms of how it plays out, like you mentioned before about good, like the order is for good to rule.
Yes.
And so that's a truth, if you like. But the way we live is for what feels good to rule. And so what we call good is what feels good. And then what truth does is it teaches us that what we feel is good is not necessarily good. So it gives us an ability to put it on hold, you know, not act out of what feels good, but live from what we understand to be true. So not living. And I think the whole thing around if you had a 2-year-old mindset in an 18-year-old, you know, while walking around the supermarket with a 2-year-old can be hell. If it was an 18-year-old, it would be absolutely, you know, that much worse. So in the story of Jacob and Esau, the principle is for, and I think that's what's coming through, the principle is for Isaac, like Isaac is that good should rule, but Esau is what's called natural good. And natural good can you know, kindness and goodness, and, or external goodness, a mild disposition, all of that can actually give the impression that there's nothing to actually work on. I'm okay. You know, I'm a nice person. I'm a good person. But what truth says is, well, hang on a minute. You know, you've got a job of reflecting to do here, you know, motivation-wise. And so that whole story is about how that shift comes about, so that when Esau rules, when Jacob accedes to good, so truth comes under what is good, what you have is then good in the leading position, so it's a spiritual or a higher quality of good. And Jacob are the truths that come from that.
And the end of the story, of that particular story, is that Esau is actually enriched by the process that's going on in Jacob. So then the natural good comes back into the picture in a regenerated form. Look, it flips me into also, you know, the picture of Noah's Ark. And the will and the dividing of the will and the understanding. I'm going to put will over here, but then, okay. But that the old will is corrupt, and he talks about this is where the new will forms. New will. And that sort of speaks to me about two orders going on within us at any, you know, at any given time. If we're regenerating, we've got an order going up, we've got an order going down. In my Arcana work for tomorrow, there's a really interesting passage about voluntary and involuntary impulses within the body. I'm still trying to work through the processes of this, but he basically says that the involuntary processes of the body are aligned with the heart, and they are always leading us towards order, whereas the voluntary processes, the things that we think about, are aligned with the lungs. They are the things we have more control over, and they are always leading us to disorder. So there's this... I'll refer to it tomorrow. I'll give you the quote tomorrow. But there's this sort of constant interplay. And now that got me thinking about what Dave was saying yesterday about automatic writing. Okay. But then I think, well, there's actually these two orders within us, and where does the automatic writing fit in? Again, with ballet piano, these, just understand, these are pieces of big wad of music that I've played for the last 7 years, so I know these pieces quite well. And I spent the last month playing for ballet exams and just observing myself and observing this very phenomenon within myself, that on occasion I could actually forget where I was in the music, and as long as I didn't panic, it kept going. But as soon as I go, oh, what's going on? Then I'd make a mess of it.
That's like running down the escalators. As soon as you start thinking about what you're doing, you go,
yeah. So that I sort of aligned with this idea of the involuntary processes are always leading towards an order, whereas the voluntary, you know, our thinking about it can lead us into disorder. But then when I look at the automatic writing and the way Swedenborg experienced that, that I wonder whether that the order that's being led into is the wrong order. Now, look, I've got no answers on this one, but this is all just, you can see how, for me, it's all just sort of coming up everywhere. So I don't know, any comments on that one? I'd love some answers.
Well, I don't know where the automatic writing fits in, because it's Swedenborg didn't understand what it was, and there was no will of his in it, so it was just some sort of extra corporeal phenomenon. So I think it was related to anything, really.
Well, he understood something about it. If he want, who was it?
Well, it had to be disorder, because we're not supposed to have.
He wanted to destroy.
Yeah, he felt it had to be. He felt it had to be destroyed.
So it was a mixed bag of truth, perhaps, or falsities mixed in, because he could never verify who was the source of that.
And was he afraid that the source might have been himself?
Jury.
I think the
sure on that.
The involuntary aspects are those that are vital to life. The Lord needs to be in control of those directly, because if we were I mean, I don't know because I haven't read around it, but my thinking is that there's involuntary, like if you take this image here, if we're left to ourselves, we head to the lowest form of disorder possible. So there is that kind of that's sort of unconscious as well. So there's a sort of involuntary aspect to that, but where we're talking involuntary in that context is actually the Lord takes control of those things that are vital to life, and by that to spiritual life, to preserve an opportunity for a spiritual awakening and development.
So actually, it's when Wog was volunteering to participate in a process that left him in an involuntary state when he was automatic writing. Does that shed any light on it?
Then didn't
when he opened himself up to wherever it comes from, it's not him doing it.
Didn't like what he saw.
It's not him betting the quality of where it's coming from.
Well, one of the laws of the universe is that a spirit with a person doesn't know they're with the person, do they? They influence us, our spirits are with us, but they don't actually know they're with us. And if you're doing automatic writing, I think they would do, because they've got control of your body.
Okay.
So it would be disordered.
Didn't you talk to one after he wrote and said that he wasn't aware of the fact that he was writing through Swedenborg?
Oh, yeah, he did too. Yeah.
Look, anyway, guys, it's 10 to 4. I'm going to wrap that one up. Thank you. For me, it's an ongoing question, I suppose, and it's fascinating me. It's, as I say, it's informed the way that I've looked at everything that we've talked about in seminar so far. And I guess it will just continue to develop. So thank you for your comments.
Thanks, David. Thank you.